Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, you are still away, hence why we're doing this over the phone. So people will notice I'm in studio. You are on a private island in Manitoba. I think you're the only one there. There's a palm tree. Sounds pretty Kokomo to me.
Like I said, it's a private island in Manitoba, a short ferry ride away from Kokomo. Yeah, you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm the only one from Vancouver here.
You know, when you make it big in real estate, this is the trip you must take in the summer, right? I think it's Central Canada in the summer. Are you heading to Grand Beach? Is that the promised land?
Grand Beach is a promised land, that's for sure. You can wade out for miles.
Yeah, you can wear your flood pants and still go swimming, like in the deep end. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. No, there's some really fantastic beaches here, that's for sure. But I think, you know, as this will drop, you're away as well. So we are kind of deep summer in this, what we thought was kind of a post-COVID world, which is turning out to, you know, COVID's got, it sounds like we're not quite done with it yet. But it sounds to me like the market has, as we expected, and I think we talked about on the show for this summer, really hit the pause button.
You know, it's interesting because mid-July, the active listings dropped 27% from mid-June. So just in the previous month. So 27%. So sellers have kind of decided to, you know, I think focus likely on summer, their family reopening. It seems like a lot of people are just not wanting to come on the market right now in kind of the depth of the summer. We also had that heat wave that seems to have lasted quite some time. It's been an odd summer. Now, of course, the fires are still raging across BC. And, you know, it's just been a kind of a wild ride here over the course of July so far. But, you know, my sense is, yeah, the markets are going to be taking a breath for July, likely for August. But I have a feeling we're going to be busy again come fall.
Well, yeah. And the reopening continues. So it'll be interesting to see what impact that plays. But, yeah, everybody take a breath while you can. Enjoy the summer. And so let's talk a little bit about Jeff Poe before we move on.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Poe is a friend of the show. He is he's a great guy all around. We've known Jeff for quite some time. We wanted to have Jeff on the show partly because he's kind of a regular real estate investor, like just a guy who's I feel like he's relatable on the level of you know, he's put some hard work into buying revenue properties in the Lower Mainland. And I think a lot of people will probably see themselves in Jeff Poe.
What I like about Jeff here, and this is the From Zero to Kokomo series, is Jeff's had some big successes, but very down to earth. Definitely, I would say Jeff is the opposite of a hype man, right?
Exactly.
A very reasoned, well considered. He sold a property recently in Vancouver. We talk about that, why he sold, what he's going to do with the proceeds. So it's a really interesting conversation. I think there's a lot to learn from Jeff. And the other thing is he kind of specializes, you know, he sells real estate here in the Lower Mainland, but also, you know, he's helped a lot of our colleagues in the industry with personal finances.
Exactly.
So he's, in terms of financial literacy, I think he's a deep thinker, very smart guy. And he's a great one for the Zero to Kokomo series. That is for sure.
Yeah. And we should say part of the goal with this Zero to Kokomo series is to have people right across the spectrum, because a lot of the feedback in the VREP community has been, you know, it's fantastic to hear Colin Boza's journey, But not everybody gets to, you know, BOZA status in terms of, you know, becomes a real estate developer, et cetera. So we're trying to have a real mix of people on the show. People like, you know, mom and pop style investors. And then, of course, we're going to have people that are really, really, you know, I would say kind of seasoned investors with, you know, 100+ doors. So it's really going to run across the spectrum. But I think you're going to find a lot of these episodes are very relatable, and it's definitely going to help you with your journey to Kokomo.
Absolutely. Before we cut to our talk with Jeff Poe, though, Adam, we do have our sponsor this week. Thankfully, we are sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our brokerage, best brokerage in town. The culture, the energy. They just had a golf tournament that I missed. That was disappointing, although I don't think they'd be disappointed that I missed it the way I play golf. But Oakland Realty, great place to hang your hat. If you're a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change and re-energize your business, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That is oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020.
Yeah, Matt. Well, this is a great conversation with Jeff Poe. So why don't we cut to the conversation, and we'll see you at the outro.
Absolutely. Enjoy, guys.
Okay, so we're here with Jeff Poe, Vancouver realtor and investor. And I got to say, you're not a financial coach, but you actually have a lot of financial literacy. And you were for a while doing videos on Instagram, which I don't know if you're still doing them, but really, really insightful videos, I should say.
No, yeah, I was doing quite a bit of financial literacy videos because, you know, doing a lot of real estate videos, just, you know, doing it for 13 years, repeating the same things to clients.
You've been in the business 13 years.
13 years, yeah. And then eventually I was putting out some videos about real estate tips, and then I kind of got into real estate investing tips and why real estate.
Right.
And I kind of got into financial literacy.
Yeah.
And I started getting more DMs from realtors and talking about their budgeting, and it became more financial tips for realtors.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, and I just kind of stopped doing it because I'm doing a reno in my basement and the market has been insanely busy.
Right.
And some of the realtors I actually have been working with, like, they have actually kind of informally hired me. They've just been ghosting me because they're so busy with real estate too, right? So it's just kind of been on hold. And sometimes they just reach out, and I just kind of been that realtor financial guy.
Yeah.
I've actually been mentoring a couple of realtors too. So
great.
With their career and also, like, first thing, like, money advice.
Right. And we should say for Matt and our listeners over 50 that DM stands for direct messaging.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Thanks.
Okay. I was like,
just clarifying.
What are we talking about?
Matt's still stuck on DMing. But no, that's great. Well, maybe we can talk about, like, so first of all, you've been in real estate for 13 years, right?
Yeah.
Why real estate? Just as even just an asset class.
Well, I graduated university, had no idea what I wanted to do still. And then you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? Like everyone probably did.
Yeah.
Who got into real estate. And then I just always wanted to buy real estate. Like I didn't come from money. My dad was a mechanic. My mom was a secretary, and they were able to pay for my school. So, and it was through buying, you know, vacant land in Mission and Maple Ridge, and I'm like, okay, real estate's the key to wealth. And so then after reading the book, and then I started in 2007, I graduated, couldn't find a job. So I was applying for jobs, and I was watching HGTV all day while making cover letters and resumes. And I said, well, I always wanted to buy real estate, so why not? And then when I got into real estate, 08 hit, and then I think I did one deal that year. And I realized I can't buy real estate if I'm not selling real estate. So, yeah, so that's just kind of what happened. And 13 years later, I haven't acquired a ton of properties, but I've acquired some properties. And, you know, eventually my real estate career grew. So, yeah, just kind of the story.
So you're talking with a lot of people who are reaching out to you, Jeff, because I think they see that you're successful in business, but also successful in saving money and deploying it properly, I would say, in the real estate world. Can you talk a little bit about what your long-term real estate goals are and where you're at now?
I think with my real estate goals, it's more it's just more investment goals in general. I just want to eventually replace my income, replace the expenses I need to live my lifestyle. So whether that's through real estate, whether it's through other investments, maybe to grow net worth over time and let compound interest do its thing. So I'm not just solely in real estate. I was for a whole decade, and then I just kind of got into more ETFs as well and passive income stuff too. So but I definitely truly believe in real estate because it's gotten me where I am. The biggest thing about real estate is the more it works for you, the less you have to work. And that's what I love about it. Like that principal pay down, like the cash flow, the appreciation's a bonus. But being in Vancouver, you get that. So that's kind of been my real estate goals, and to eventually replace my income and still keep it. And then I could pass it on to kids, future generation. Just want to be able to cash flow. Once those are paid off, that will be my income. Whatever passive income stuff I'm doing as well will replace my income. And then I just pass on the capital to future generations, give philanthropy, whatever, right? And those are the things that to me is more meaningful and gives more of an impact.
So you, we know you sold a property recently. I'm interested in this because it kind of leads to one of the questions we've been thinking about, like what kind of investor are you? And obviously at different points and different markets, different strategies kind of emerge. But we know you sold a property earlier this year. Can you talk about that property in general, when you bought it, why you thought this year was a good time to sell it, or what the situation was, and how that plays into your long-term real estate strategies?
Right. So I'm a long-term hold. I'm not a big flipper. I just see the market. When I'm seeing people flip and they're making good money, you put a lot of effort and stress and labor into it. But sometimes I just feel if you just let it ride, and that appreciation alone, after all your costs, your time, you know, paying sub trades, you might have netted the same amount while not doing anything.
Right.
Right. So I've always just been long-term hold, just fill it with tenants and, you know, increase the rents ever so slightly. I'm a small-time investor, to answer the first part of that question. I'm a small-time investor. I've never really increased the rents every year on my tenants. I just get market rent once they leave. But yeah, long-term hold for me. And that property, I purchased it in 2010, and it was asking $599 for a 5-bedroom house in New Westminster in Saberton. And it was 100 years old at the time.
Suited?
There was a suite, and there was a kind of a grandfathered attached carriage home.
Wow.
Right. So that I actually
had. So was it three? So three units?
Three units. I had all three rented out, and then it was brutal. Like the upstairs and downstairs, like you end up being a counselor, right? Not a landlord. Like they're complaining about the person upstairs, or like they're too noisy, or I could smell the cooking. Can you tell them it stinks? I'm like, okay, you know what? So it was brutal.
Fairly subjective.
I was there a lot. And the best way to get handy and to work with your hands and learn about it is to buy a 100-year-old house.
Right.
Right. So, There were growing pains. I was there every month, and you know, your friends are at patios and beaches and birthday parties, and I'm there like painting, picking up dead mice, and I got my clothes ready to go. At 1 o'clock, my alarm goes off. I scrub my arms and get dressed up. I go do my open houses, and I'm back there. Right? Those are growing pains. And, but hey, like, what is it? 11 years later, I've reaped the rewards.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, the amount of work I had to do for how much rent they're paying me, it was worth it.
What did you sell it for?
So it was 70 days on the market when I bought it.
Yeah.
And then I ended up in multiples after 70 days.
It's always the way it works, yeah. Right? I mean, it's...
Yeah. So then...
that happened last night on the listing.
Yeah. Adam's listings last night.
Yeah. 30, 35 or 40 days on the market, and two people come to the table. Both between the same 3 hours on a random day, right?
Right.
I mean, we see that in our industry all the time. It's funny.
Of course. So then this is in November, just 2020. And then I was looking at values in the area. I'm like, okay, this is worth.
Wait, sorry. You were in multiples when you
I bought it
in 2010.
So
the list was $599.
Right. So I paid $586 for it.
In multiples?
In multiples.
Nice.
Slower market, different market. And then I rented out three suites, and then I was getting $3,200 in rent. But then I just don't want to deal with all the, you know, the parking issues, too many tenants. So I just rented out as a house and a carriage home, and I got lower rent. But I think average, I was probably just getting $3,000. I mean, we're in Vancouver, right?
Yeah.
We're in Lower Mainland. You're not getting that 1% rule that you hear all the time. So it's, you know, like 0.5% rule, really, it covered, barely covered. But I was managing it.
So this was, so just to be clear, you buy the house, you rent it out for $3,200
right.
with interest rates at that time, you were cash flowing, but just barely, and that was with you managing the property.
Right. And I'm talking about like a $5-$10 cash flow. It wasn't good. It's Lower Mainland, right? So, and this is my first legit rental property. My very first one, I rented it out and I eventually moved into it, but this is my first legit rental property. So fast forward 10 years later, November 2020, I'm looking at the stats. I'm looking at the 10-year change in New Westminster, and it kept saying 80%. But I'm like looking at comps in my area. I'm like, my property's only gone up 50, 55%. I'm like, what's going on with Sapperton? Because that brewery district is kind of up and coming.
Right.
And I just didn't see the value. Then I was like, okay, this is $950 all day. And then in January, I saw a listing go up on my block. And it was asking 1.1 and it sold for 1.3. I said, okay, if I want to get rid of a 111-year-old house, under-rented, a little beat up, this is the market to do it. So I listed it and well, you asked, but I don't usually like to share, but I sold it for 1.34.
So you outdid the comp on the street.
Right.
So can we talk about, like, strategically, did you follow that comp as like, because I mean, clearly, you can point to that comp. Like that's, I mean, I monitor buildings specifically that I can go like, okay, if a comp comes up and you know that, okay, this is a good time to sell because same unit just sold on the third floor or house on the same block just sold for 1.3. Is that what kind of motivated you to put it right on the market at that time to point directly to the comp?
I think, you know, I don't usually monitor my markets as much because I'm a long-term hold.
Right.
Well, I was kind of getting the itch because now I'm at a point where in my career, my life, where I actually want to replace some income.
Right.
Right. So I was looking to invest it elsewhere because Lower Mainland, it's, you get the higher, low cap rates. So you get higher potential for appreciation.
Right.
Well, I'm at the point now in my life where my daughter, she's 4 years old. I've missed out on quite a bit with work, being busy. And I wanted to maybe find more efficient use of my money. Like I was less net worth play and more passive income play. So I started looking at the area because I wanted to liquidate and redeploy somewhere else.
Right.
Right. So that's the only reason why I did sell it. And like I said, being 111 years old, it'd be nice to get something with a little more peace of mind down the road, less maintenance. So that's kind of why I was
You know, it's funny. And so you sold it in February or?
I think it was March.
March. Because that's like, not to say the property was a dog, but where the inventory is so low and the prices are appreciating, you know, so many people are sit on the sidelines. So many people that are potentially thinking of selling sit on the sidelines and say, okay, well, I'm going to ride this up. But arguably, you probably got a better price in March than you could get today.
Yeah, I remember in March I sold it. And then 2 weeks later, I got a listing in Commercial and I blew it out of the park. No, I don't give myself any credit. I think you called me on that one too.
I called you on that. We talked about that. That was one of the biggest
when
sales.
When you took credit for it?
Yeah, I don't give myself credit for it. It's the market, right?
I think you guys did a good job marketing it, but you had multiples on it. You absolutely blew the doors off it. That was a standout sale. It was kind of an outlier, I would say, in the Grandview area.
I probably made it harder for a lot of listing agents in the area afterwards. My apologies.
It was a nice place. It was just, it seems like a bit of an outlier comp now.
But when I sold that, I was like, did I undersell my property? But you can't think about that, right? Because I was looking to redeploy right away into something else.
Right.
And I was actually looking at Kamloops and I missed out on a couple of offers. I've been outbid myself. So money's still there, but you know, things just worked out and seems like the market's taking a bit of a breather. So I could take my time and put in subject offers because I was putting offers in Kamloops sight unseen.
Yeah.
Right? Like just video tours, no inspections.
So there's a couple things I want to unpack here, because there's some interesting things about that first deal. One is, why New West? Like, how did you, why did you settle on that market in 2010 specifically? I mean, you had opportunities likely in, like, even in East Vancouver, had you upped the budget slightly or so why New West?
It was the carrying costs, because I was putting, to be honest, like I really leveraged myself. It was pretty much a zero down mortgage. So it's, I borrowed 20% down payment from a line of credit. So I was paying the interest on that. And then 80% financing, right? So with New West having three suites, I'm getting a lot more rent compared to the purchase price.
Right.
Whereas if I was, you know, looking for a condo in Vancouver, I wouldn't even be able to come close to the rent I was getting.
With 20% down.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's why it limited me there. I mean, I was looking in, I'm from North Burnaby and I currently live on Capitol Hill. So I grew up on Capitol Hill as well. So I'm two blocks from my parents, but I was living in a condo in North Burnaby at the time. And then I was looking at houses in Capitol Hill, but same thing, like 100K more for a little slightly less rent. Just didn't make sense for me.
So it was the rent, it was the fact that it was basically a grandfathered triplex that made the deal essentially.
Exactly. I mean, how much do you want to subsidize your rental, right? You're supposed to look for cash flow in Lower Mainland. It's hard to find that. So it's more like, how much do you want to subsidize your cash flow and lose a month? And I didn't want to lose any.
Right.
Still growing my real estate career, right? So.
And you said, so 3,200 to start, you kind of implied it was under rented, or the rents were not at market when you sold it. How did those rents move through the years? Did it become easier to carry it? Was it kind of your comfort level, you know, in year eight better than year two?
I'm trying to think about this actually. I actually refinanced it on variable. That helped me, right? Rates went down over time, so being on the variable helped. Yeah, just kind of always carried. Just always carried itself.
Yeah.
I even pulled out 100K from it and refinanced it once to subsidize my reno on my principal residence in 2013, 2014. So real estate gives you options,
right?
Right. Like the market went up a bit and then I had some principal pay down and then the rates changed. They went lower. So I refinanced it, pulled some money out, put it on variable. My expenses were the same and my rents were slightly higher. And I was able to pull 100K out and subsidize my reno and my lifestyle.
Right.
So it's just options.
Right. Why did you manage it yourself?
That's probably more because of my mentor. I had a mentor when I got into real estate and he was a lot different. And he was kind of the perfect mentor for me. Just worked out. Back then there were personal real estate corporations, right? So his mindset was always, Jeff, I don't want to make more than gross 150K, right? Like I'm talking about like your commissions minus your business expenses, that's your gross. He didn't want to make more than 150K because he's like, every time I make a dollar after that, CRA takes what, 43, 47 cents. So that was his mindset. Was it maybe limited? Perhaps, I don't know. But then at the same time, he had like 12 properties. So why would he have to make more? So, and then he managed it all himself because he wasn't pushing high volume in real estate sales. He just managed it himself. And I actually just wanted to be a little handier with my hands. So, and you just learn a lot
kind
more.
Kind of threw yourself into the fire just to
How many times I had an iPad there on YouTube, how to, with a list, you know, going to Home Depot and like, I got to buy some caulking and thinset and grout, cheesecloth. Like, you know, it's just, you just learn and... I just wanted to learn because I'm also a realtor. So the more I do with my hands, the more I learn about property and construction.
The better realtor you become.
The more I learn about tenancy agreements and tenants' rights and landlord rights, the more I can advise, right? So it just kind of helped. But I'm at the point now, I don't want to manage my properties.
And just thinking about these growing pains, because a lot of people who listen to this show, I think, are aspiring to a door or have one or two. A lot of mom and pop investors like this, you know, there's two things that stick out to me here. One is, you know, over 11 years, what, 700K windfall, which is pretty attractive, right? I think that's like alarm bells for people.
And we're talking about one deal, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. That's nicely done. Jeff, no, is what no, I'm saying. But secondly, the growing pains, like, you know, I was a counselor, I was, you know, setting alarms to rush off to an open house from working all morning at the property, and everybody else at a barbecue and I'm back there. Like, can we kind of unpack the amount of work it actually, you know, I'm sure there's certain days where it felt like it would never end, but how much kind of year over year, how much time do you think you were actually spending on this property? And it was an old, you know, 100 plus year old house, right? So it's going to take more work than some.
Like, the big picture, looking back, like, it was nothing. Like, you know, 4 hours for the first year, let's just even say 4 hours a month, like, mm-hmm. dealing with stuff, like letting the hot water tank guy in and learning how to, like, you know, put up a backsplash, or dealing with, like, a bad toilet, or actually had a plumbing pipe burst on me. So I just cut up the wall and then just
fixed it up.
Yeah, me and my pops. So my dad helped me. Yeah. So, I mean, if you just look at, like, how much, like you just said, 700K, even capital gains, and I set that aside. So that's just a side note, like, realtors, like, when you're making money, set aside and pay Siri right away.
Yeah.
Right. So I got this proceeds from a sale. I took 180K and put it aside. That's for next year's taxes.
Right.
Like right off the bat. Right. So, but yeah, if you look back how much I made versus how many hours, tens of thousands of dollars an hour, right? It's just of comparing, you're letting your money work for you.
Right.
Right. You're not working for money. Your money is working for you.
So, Jeff, one thing that strikes me too, and of course this specific deal in New West is I think a win in anyone's mind, right? But I guess without going into are you bullish on Vancouver long term, there's been a number of moments over the last 11 years in which inventory is very low, prices are rising quite dramatically, and you didn't sell it, you sold it right now. You know, 5 years from now, you might look back and think, oh my God, that was a huge mistake, right? There's always that potential and no one wants to look back. But why, as a long-term hold investor, why did you choose to sell that one now?
Well, yeah, if I look back 5 years, I'll probably be kicking myself, right? Because, you know, real estate just kind of goes up over the years. I mean, it might not, but over the long, long term, it's just time in the market. So I might be kicking myself. At the same time, I know I won't, because I'm going to redeploy that money. I'm going to buy more real estate because it's got me where I am. I believe in it. You invest in a stock, you invest in, you know, ETFs. There's no leverage. You buy a $100 stock, you need $100. With real estate, you buy a $500,000 property, you need 100K, right? And you get potential cash flow. You get principal paid on over the years. You get appreciation possibly, right? And that leverage. So I probably won't be kicking myself, because I want to try to find another property or two or even three, because I've just always wanted to be in real estate. But why I sold it is, you know, it's so random. I was on TikTok and I just saw this guy talking about, you know, he's just kind of like a financial literacy guy. I'm obsessed with financial literacy. So he says you have to have an exit strategy.
Right.
So whether it's like, I mean, if you're in crypto, like, what's your exit strategy? If you're in ETFs, or you want to eventually retire, like, allocate more things to bonds, like, what's your exit strategy? So for me, I was like, okay, I'm getting, at the time I was thinking, okay, maybe I could get 1.2, because my house wasn't as nice as that 1.3 house. I'm getting 400 times rent. 1.2 million divided by 3,000 rent. I'm getting 400 times rent. That's a good number to get the hell out.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just exit strategy. And like I said, like, I was also wanted to be more efficient with my money. I wanted more passive income and replace my income, because I'm at a point where I want to maybe not step back my real estate career, but just keep it steady. I don't want to grow it, because I got one kid. We're not having another. She's my only child. I've missed out on quite a bit of her life. So I want to be a dad.
Yeah.
Right. So it just kind of all worked out and timed well. Why I didn't sell in the 2016 market, because long-term hold. And if I didn't have a kid today, I probably would have kept that New West property. But now I have a kid, I'm going to spend my time finding different avenues of how to invest the proceeds of that sale.
And I want to get into that. Before I do, though, I just want to mention for our listeners over 50 and for Matt, TikTok is a popular social media app.
I don't even get in there.
he's been just, since you said that, he's just been staring off into space.
Let's.
I'm not that far from 50 though.
Yeah.
So you're
I legitimately did not know that people are talking about financial literacy on TikTok. I've seen people videotaping dances and stuff.
Yeah. Dances and stuff. But once you start like searching
a break in the dance.
Yeah. But once you start searching different things and like just start getting more of that, right? So it just became more financial literacy.
Whenever I see people dancing, I always think, what's my exit strategy? Yeah. I'm in that mindset as well. So
let's talk about, here's the biggest thing I wanna touch on is this transition now. You're still a young guy. You're still in your 30s. Now you have a young child. You've been in the Vancouver market. Your net worth has grown phenomenally by investing in the Vancouver market. Now we're at this pivot point in life where we're trying to say, and now we're trying to do more of really kind of the, you know, call it the rich dad or whatever, but we're looking for cash flow properties, right? Like we're moving to that model because a lot of people argue that our market doesn't make a lot of sense for an investor. You have to play the cap gain and the cap gain's never guaranteed. So can you talk about now kind of moving into markets now where you're going to try and get that cash flow? Like where are maybe the opportunities or what are your goals there? Like what makes sense to you moving forward?
I mean, this is very, very little research, but just the research that I've done, we looked into Prince George, looked into like Kelowna, Kamloops. I mean, looked at the small towns like Trail and, you know, Cranbrook, Creston. Still within BC, even seen some in Moncton, like some multifamily in Moncton, like fourplexes. Like you're getting $400,000 or $500,000 and getting
huge
almost
rents,
$4,000 or $5,000 in rent. Like that's almost close to 1% rule you get. But I just don't know that market that well, but I have kind of focused on Kamloops because it's just, it's not that far away. It's a big city. It's a decent sized city. They have a hospital. And like, you know, just even looking at, $700,000 there is going to get you close to $4,000 in rent. Whereas $700,000 in Vancouver gets you $2,200 in rent, right? So it's just, you're going to get a bit of cash flow, even with a property manager. So the last one I was looking at was a purchase price of $720,000, which I lost out on, but $3,800 in rent. And with a property manager after taxes, insurance, I was probably going to get about $700 a month cash flow.
Right.
So, I mean, not sexy, but at the same time, you know, you don't have to pay the full $750,000.
But your cash on cash with principal pay down is, you know, probably
about 15 or 13%. I can't quite remember. Yeah. I think it was about 13%.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good, as long as you manage it and you have it managed and you hang on to it,
right?
You're getting a good return on your money.
And it's time in the game, right? Like you look at your first mortgage term of 5 years, you look at how much principal you're paying and how much interest. I mean, people think, oh, it's probably 80% interest. No, if you do the math, it's actually quite good now at today's rates. You may be getting 55%, 45% interest.
Right.
But once you get to that third term, like that year 11 through 15, that amount of principal pay down is huge compared to the interest. So it's longevity in it. It truly is. Because you know, people who keep flipping or buy fairly quickly, like you need to get that principal pay down. And that's that year 11 to 15 probably, right? So it's longevity. Time is, like, you hear it all the time, whether it's stocks or real estate. It's not timing the market. It's time in the market.
Well, and that's what I like when you said, yeah, you know, Sapperton, I wasn't actually really, I didn't even hardly follow the market because it's like, set it, forget it. Don't worry about, you're not looking at every sale in the area going, is now the time? You know, I think you see that all the time, the kind of level of anxiety or that kind of just trigger happy nature. There's a guy in our office who, you know, it's like he sold a bunch of properties and he seems to sell them pretty quickly and always is like, why did I do that?
Real estate fees, property transfer tax, legal fees, mortgage penalties, like that all eats up.
Mm-hmm.
That all eats up.
I feel like as you get older, it's maybe harder to pull the trigger. And as you have more people depending on you, it might be harder to pull the trigger. Was it easier for, you know, 28-year-old Jeff Poe to pull the trigger than it is for, you know, Jeff in his late 30s. I won't disclose your age.
Yeah, actually, I have 5 months left in my 30s. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm pretty much 40.
the mat.
I don't think it's harder to pull the trigger. I might just be a little more, I might do a little more research than, you know, doing 100% financed house like I did when I was, you know, 28. But of course, at the time, I was willing to take that risk. I was starting my career. I'm like, I'm ready at zero. Why not go? Why not do it? But now, yeah, like you build some net worth, you have a kid, you have a family. You want to be a little more, I guess, do your due diligence, right? You still want to be conservative, in my opinion, right? You want to make sure you work so hard for money to save and invest it, and then you let your investments work. You're not going to be reckless with it. You got to be still conservative, right? Like, I still haven't invested in crypto. Like everyone's like, yo, crypto. Like, I don't get it. So I'm not investing in it. I don't get stocks.
So I've studied it and I don't get it.
Yeah. There's probably like a book out there for it.
And I put a lot of time into crypto. I still don't get it.
Yeah. Like, I don't even invest in individual stocks because in theory, you should be researching the company, knowing the financials and all that stuff. So I just do ETFs, right? Like the index funds.
Right.
I just invest in the top 500 companies in the US and let them work for you.
More like the wealth preservation model.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff, based on this conversation, I understand that your principal residence, you rented out before you moved in back in the early days of your career, but this house in Sapperton was your first legitimate investment property. I'm curious to see how, and potentially kind of bouncing off of this house investment, if there's other real estate investments you've made since, how that first deal informed those investments and how they're doing, if you sold them all in March.
Yeah, no. So my journey was in 08, I started. I didn't make much money. And then 2009, I found a great condo that I wanted to live in eventually. So I got my parents to co-sign a mortgage because self-employed, you need 2 years of income.
Right.
So then I bought the condo and I rented it out. And then 2010, I bought the house in Sapperton. Just kind of leveraged a bit off of the first one. Borrowed some line of credit from mom and dad. I mean, didn't have money. Yes, I got help. I get it. Like, you need help. So I did get help. I definitely acknowledge that. So I got some line of credit from them to purchase the second property. And I eventually moved into my first condo. And then that first condo, that which was first a rental that I moved into. And then in 2013, I saw a house on Capitol Hill, 2 blocks from my parents, 3 blocks from my sister. And they were asking $800K. And I said, okay, this is a teardown, but I can revitalize it. It's just a bungalow with a basement. It's a square. It's easy to update. And then I put the offer in and then I sold my condo. And the funny thing is, going back to like time in the market, and you just can't predict it. My mentor at the time, he's like, you are absolutely insane. You are paying such a premium for this house. 33 foot frontage in Capitol Hill for $800K. Right now you're looking back like all day, right? But yeah. Back then, even him, he's been in the business since 1979 and he thought I was insane. Yeah. He thought I was paying a premium. So I bought that, sold the condo, and then refied the house in New West and helped me with my renovation. And then I just kind of coasted. Kind of got complacent. And then my kid was born. And the minute my kid was born, I asked my business partner, JJ Liu, his kid was going to be born a few months later. And I said, we got to buy something. So we just teamed up and bought a condo for our daughters. So, and that was in Brentwood. So since then, I mean, it's not a lot. I'm not a big time investor. I'm really a small mom and pop investor. Actually, just pop. It's just me. My wife just lets me do whatever I want with money, right? So it doesn't hold me back. It's all on me. But yeah, so at that time, I had 3 properties. So now I sold one. So I'm looking to, with the proceeds from that, I could probably buy 2 or 3.
Right.
At the same time, I might want to put it into something more passive. Because when you're buying a property, you're putting 20-25% down, you have a mortgage that's eating up into your cash flow, whereas I could put into something that's giving me maybe 7-10% on my money. So I have my money in some other investments right now that give me 10%, but I'm letting it reinvest and compound. But if I really wanted to, I could just have it pay me. So that's an option when I want to get to financial independence is, hey, stop reinvesting it, pay it to me now in dividends, right? So it's that shift from the net worth play to the income play for me and when.
Right.
And so if you continue on and you deploy in real estate, you'd be looking at buying, probably taking the windfall from New West and buying maybe 3 or 4 properties. And are you thinking in the detached markets in kind of smaller towns or more kind of secondary markets in BC?
That I'm really just open to. I just figure right now I'm going to take my time. I don't want to rush it. Obviously, if it's detached, it has to have a suite, you know, just get the extra doors. Or if anyone wants to partner up and look into multifamily, something I'm not really that well-versed in. But I have options. Or instead of buying 2-3 homes, maybe I'll just buy 2 and then put, you know, a couple hundred K into like a MIC. Like I have some money in mortgage investment corporations. So those give me dividend income. Like maybe I just put into that, right? So if you have 100K, you're getting 10K a year. Right? So I haven't fully decided. I think I listen to your podcast and you ask a lot of, one, I don't even know why I'm on here. But you got these big, smart, intelligent guests on your show. And it's kind of the same kind of theme is, where do you invest and how would you deploy? And there's a big question mark. Like inflation is high, real estate is high.
It's a tricky time.
It's such a tricky time. So yeah, I'm probably losing out to inflation, but at the same time, it's why would I rush it? Why don't I just take my time and doing something that I'm comfortable with?
Yeah. But and just to say, like, you and Matt and I have known each other for a while. And, you know, when we talk about real estate, we're all kind of dealing with the same challenges of where to deploy and kind of in similar kind of markets, looking at similar markets. And we're having these conversations on the podcast all the time. But I think there's a disconnect probably between, you know, someone like Colin Boza looking at markets for opportunities and most of the people listening to this show looking at opportunities, right? So it's refreshing to have kind of the pop, one part pop
yeah.
investor who's looking to try and figure out the passive income in a market in BC overall is not a super easy nut to crack. And, you know, sometimes I mean, we've looked at the East Coast, we've monitored that market. We've had people on talking about, you know, Windsor, we've been involved in investor groups. We talked about Moncton and Hamilton and other markets. And sometimes I feel like we're at a disadvantage in BC, but then again, the capital appreciation and the fact that I think there's just so much room in a lot of the subsidiary markets in BC as well. You know, it's tough to say, it's tough to leave.
Yeah, that's for sure. Maybe as a last question for you here, Jeff, we started with talking a little bit about the financial literacy videos you did on Instagram and how a lot of people reached out to you in real estate specifically. And I think, I don't think I'd be way off to say realtors are kind of notoriously bad with money and flashy potentially and spending money they don't have and all that stuff. But maybe without focusing on realtors, what is something you see your friends, family, other people in the industry, people, you know, in Vancouver generally, what is one thing you see that is just a clear mistake in terms of dealing with finances?
I think in general, the population worldwide, we struggle with financial literacy because money is such a taboo topic and you can't talk about it. So if you don't talk about it, you don't learn about it, you don't know about it. So you're not surrounded around it. So investing is great. But before you can even invest, you need to have money. So that's step one. So it's, you need to have money. Like before you even talk about real estate or investing in the stock market, you need to know how to spend less than you make. You need to know how to save it. You need to discipline. You need to have a plan for your money. And you need financial literacy. It doesn't help being in Vancouver. Like you see these nice cars and, you know, people are dressed up so well, but it's like people are keeping up with the Joneses. But at the same time, I truly believe the Joneses are broke. They're trying to impress you too, but they're
it's a vicious circle.
It's a vicious circle. So it's, you know, we had a financial company come to my previous brokerage and they talked about how there's those realtors who make 300-400K, but their net worth is whatever they make that year, whatever they could save. And there's always that closet guy who makes 120K and he's a millionaire. And someone in the boardroom's like, that's Bo. That's Jeff. People call me Polly. That's Jeff. And I was like, in a way, I was kind of proud of that because it's like, I did it my way. I didn't get into the flashy stuff. I didn't care about looking the part. I didn't care about picking up dead mice and painting my own rentals when my buddies were at the clubs, popping bottles, picking up girls, so they say, right?
Allegedly.
So it's just,
You always hear that story when you're not there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, she's from out of town.
That one time I wasn't there, you pulled game. Yeah, game. You suddenly had game.
My girlfriend from Kelowna.
It's financial literacy. No, we don't learn about it, and you need to learn how to make your money work for you. That's the number one thing. Eventually, you want to stop trading time for money and let your money work for you.
You heard it here first. That was great. We do have this segment. I think we got to do the five wire.
Yeah, we got to do the five wire with Poe. Question number one is, what is your favorite bar or restaurant in Vancouver?
I listen to your show so much, and like, this is the one time I'm not prepared. you know what? Like, just having a kid and I'm not really much of a foodie, I'm really just going to say the Keg. And it's not so much the food. It's just every time I go to the Keg, it's always an occasion or it's with good people.
Like an event.
Like an event or just catching up with a good friend.
Also, they got high chairs, which are important.
I don't want my steak cold.
Favorite band or song? This is a new one, Jeff.
Does it have to be a band?
No, it can be a song.
It can be an artist.
It's got to be Biggie Smalls, Notorious B.I.G. Yeah.
We have more rap on this show. Real estate and rap are...
Realtors are angry. We're just blasting the rap, going to showings in our suits, right? DMX, Nas. Or just,
and then you get out and you're like, hi.
Yeah, how are you today?
How's it going?
What a lovely day.
What is one book that you'd recommend to anyone listening?
Oh, gosh. Going with the financial literacy avenue, I'd have to say it's called The Richest Man in Babylon by George Klassen. It's not, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I loved. There's a lot of great finance books, but this is a good intro in terms of budgeting, getting your money working for you, saving, being conservative, and pay yourself first.
That's a good one.
That's an awesome book.
Right on. One piece of advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
Besides buy more real estate, which I've heard enough on this show, Don't focus so much on what you do because no one's watching you because they're worried about themselves, right? Like if you're worried about someone's judgment of you, they're worried about themselves. And if they do judge you, it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with them and their insecurities.
That's a great one.
This is the wise Jeff Poe here. Last question for you, Jeff, and we really appreciate your time. What is something you have bought in the last year or two for under $1,000 that has transformed your life in a positive way?
It's too short for me to know if it's transformed my life, but I just got a squat rack in the house.
Wow.
Yeah, so I haven't pushed a barbell in over 4 years, so I think that's going to transform my life. Hopefully I don't iron my clothes and just hang it on.
It's a new shirt rack.
It's a new shirt rack when I iron my clothes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. With the whole pandemic, we just built a home gym. So.
Nice. Yeah, where'd you build it? Did you put it in the garage or is it in the basement?
So my basement suite was a two and den. And then my tenants left. I stole a bedroom and den. So currently, prior to them leaving, I had a small like 12 by 12 rec room, which was our gym, my office, and the laundry room. So now that's just my office and laundry. And I've moved the gym into a 22 by 11 space. So I got a cable machine, got a squat rack, dumbbells, elliptical for the wife. So yeah, so now it's a one bedroom suite. And I could probably get the same rent I was getting as a two and den as a one bedroom now because I never increased the rent to my previous tenants.
Wow.
Dad bod. Dad bod's going to stay.
I'm the only guy. Staying.
It's still staying. Who likes doing abs, right? So, I always just say if the chest sticks up more than the gut, then you're fit.
Yeah.
So exactly. I'd be bench pressing all day.
Right. Skipping leg day. Awesome. Well, hey, Jeff, how can people find out more about what you're up to?
Probably not. I don't post much on Instagram anymore. But,
no?
You know, I will.
I think give your Instagram a follow because I really enjoy the videos you post. And you did a really great one that
with
resonated.
The right? Yeah, the whiteboard.
It was the one about, I did a few, but my favorite one is the it's a quote unquote, it's a tax write-off.
Yeah.
Like how many people just buy cars because it's a tax write-off, but do you actually know the implications of that and how much tax savings you're really getting?
Right.
That was my favorite one that I did because I got a lot of messages on that. Even accountants like, I don't know why I leased my car.
Yeah.
Like, even accountants like, yeah, you have a good point, right? So yeah, my Instagram is underscore Jeff Poe underscore. So
and Poe is P-O-H.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Hey, well, thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me on.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Jeff Poe, real estate investor, a realtor, financial guru. Jeff wears many hats, but that was a really great conversation. And, I hate to say one of my favorites, but one thing, it was a little bit different than the usual conversation we have. And for that, I was really thankful for Jeff's time.
Yeah. You know what? It was great kind of just hanging around having that conversation. And I feel like the other thing that really came out is, you know, Jeff's a hard worker and a lot of the maintenance on the properties and teaching himself, like rolling up his sleeves and teaching himself how to do a lot of this stuff. I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate. And I think that was a good kind of insight into real estate investing. It's a lot of work. It can be a lot of work for sure.
Well, yeah. And the payoff was definitely there. That was one of the takeaways for me. The other was, you know, as Jeff said, like, it sounds like he had some help at the beginning, but the amount of risk he took on was fairly striking to me. It was early in his career. You know, the numbers are much smaller than the numbers in Vancouver currently for houses in the West, at least. But that was a lot of risk he took on. And the reward was there in the end. So no, great story. And it was interesting, too, to see the types of things he's considering moving forward. All around great conversation.
Well, it's funny because I think we've talked about this on the show before. But, looking back, hindsight is always 20/20. Looking back on prices in the lower mainland, a lot of people can say, oh, wow, well, how obvious is that when you could buy a house in Vancouver for $800,000 or whatever, right? But the reality is it always feels expensive when you're in that moment, right? And it always feels risky. I remember, a good friend and a client of mine who bought Marinaside, I think it was Marinaside, for around $200,000, a condo. And he said he called his parents in Saskatchewan and they were like, are you nuts? Are you nuts? Like $200,000? And of course, now that condo is probably worth, $1.5 million or whatever. But it always felt risky, right?
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think of the time where everybody thought Vancouver was cheap. It was a while back now. And the idea of analysis paralysis and, all the rest. So, no, great conversation with Jeff, Adam. Before we go, though, we should mention a few things. One, Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. Once again, if you are not listening to what Corey Wright is doing over there, you are missing out. It's just another segment of the real estate world that I think everybody interested in residential real estate or real estate general should consider.
Yes.
So you can do that at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. That's the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. And we also have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where you can sign up for things like the Live Wire. This is our weekly mailer. VIP access to pre-sale projects, deal of the month, stats before anyone else, episodes, extras. There's no reason you shouldn't be on this list. That is the LiveWire at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also have private client services.
And Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is the best way to search for real estate in the lower mainland for sure. And I think we can even set searches up now for the interior kind of right across BC. So feel free to get in touch. It's had a huge facelift. It's a great resource. And again, no obligation, for free at our site, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, of course, we are recording this a little bit in advance, Adam, as you're on vacation. I think if I had to guess when this drops, I've probably just left the island in Manitoba off of Kokomo,
yes,
heading back. we have a lot of episodes coming up that are very exciting. August is here. The fall market is coming. I'm excited. We'll see you when you get home.
Yeah, Matt, have a good rest of your stay. Are you in Brandon? Where are you exactly? Enjoy your time in Manitoba.
Brandon, Manitoba.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, enjoy the rest of your...
Brandon or not, I do have my phone with me. If you want to talk about anything real estate related at all, give me a shout at 778-847-2854. And I am checking emails at matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com, where we should say once again, I think Jeff Poe is a perfect example of the types of stories we'd love to hear in terms of real estate investing. If you are a new investor, somebody with a couple doors, somebody that's made some big mistakes along the way or had some big wins, we'd love to hear from you. info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. And hopefully everyone's enjoying the summer and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, Matt. And thanks for putting the Steinbach Manitoba back in Kokomo.
Take care. Enjoy.
Have a dry week, guys.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.